Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:06 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is April 12th, and today what we've seen is that stock markets have been reasonably steady. Gold and precious metals pulled back somewhat from the highs that they posted intraday yesterday. Bonds have been a little bit weaker, and that we're starting to see the dollar starting to firm up, and that's particularly relevant against the yen. The yen trended. Or the let's focus on the way it's actually quoted on the screen. The dollar trended lower against the yen, really rather consistently between November and the end of March. It then rallied, and last week broke the progression of lower rally highs, and so far it's held that advance. And it's been up one day, down the next, pretty much over the last week. But when we look at this on a weekly basis, we can also see that there is certainly scope for the dollar to unwind its oversold condition relative to the trend mean. The trend mean now approximates that 110 area, which had been where the dollar had bounced on successive occasions, posted a number of failed downside breaks below it in 2017, before eventually breaking down in 2018. So there is certainly scope for some dollar steadying in here, particularly against the yen. When we look at the Japanese market, over the course of the last couple of weeks, it has rallied back above the trend mean and confirmed at least near-term support in the region of 20,000. Now, there is certainly scope here for a little bit of a pause, but if the yen continues to weaken from here, then that's going to act as a tailwind for the market, and not least because, generally speaking, stocks continue to hold following these pullbacks towards the region of the trend mean. Now, the second section index was in negative territory, and here today it's back testing its lows. It hasn't quite unwound all of its overextension relative to the trend mean. This has been a lead indicator for the Japanese market for really quite a long time. So, the extent to which it can continue to hold the region of the trend mean will be rather instructive to perhaps the fate of the Nikkei 225 over the course of the medium term, so it is certainly worth watching. Then the pound was quite firm in here today, and particularly against the euro. The euro was in fact down against the dollar, but then the pound was up against it. So what we're seeing is now that the pound is printing at 115 and change in here today for the first time in a year. But it's pulling away from what had been quite a volatile range. There have been a number of instances over the course of the last 6 months where it has failed to sustain a move above 114, but now we're seeing closes above 114 with regularity over the course of the last week or so. When we look at the trend, then it's the downtrend consistency has certainly been broken. That we had the failed downside break below 110 in the latter half of 2017, then we've had this ranging environment, and now we're seeing it breaking higher. Every time the pound rallies, it tends to represent the market beginning to think that the UK is going to remain closer to the EU following the Brexit negotiations. Quite whether the UK population is going to be of the same opinion is rather questionable, and that certainly holds out the prospect of additional political volatility at some point later this year or next year, because Parliament does have the ability to vote on whatever the deal is. And the deal so far, it looks increasingly like that the UK is going to give the EU everything it wants in return for access to the customs union for the banking sector, and will lose its ability to help set the rules within the EU in return for nominal Brexit. Considering that the question that was posed to the British public was very polarizing. It was either in or out. What's been negotiated and continues to be negotiated is anything but in or out, but rather it is in all but name. And that is, I don't think that's what people were voting for. But what it does do is remove some uncertainty. And when we look at, for example, the FTSE 350, which is the mid-cap index, and a relatively, I think, a good proxy for the state of the UK corporate sector, then it has been prone to reactions in excess of 2,000 points over the course of the last decade. And so far, this range that it's been putting in over the last year, it's in fact one of the smaller ranges it's put in over the course of that uptrend. And it is currently firming from the lower side of that range, and as long as it's doing that, we can probably continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Then, when we turn our attention to what's going on Wall Street, well, Wall Street today was in mildly firm territory. It was up about 1%. It's confirming at least near-term support in the region of the February low, and so far it has held on to it, but it is now right at the upper side of this short-term range. So the question then tomorrow will be whether it can continue to advance from this level. I continue to look at the Dow Jones, despite the fact that it is a much narrower index, because it had some of the clearest evidence of acceleration back in January, but it is also now upper at the upper side of this short-term range and was up about 300 points in here today. The Nasdaq has got a higher reaction low, and it is also firming from the region of the trend mean. So then, when we look at, for example, the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index, it continues to exhibit relative strength, and this was a reasonably impressive bounce so far this week from the region of the trend mean. So when we ask simple questions, for example, we have certainly got a number of failed upside breaks on this chart, and what that suggests is that there is ample supply above the market, but also how much profit erosion have people experienced? Well, even if they were buying at the beginning of this year, they're in positive territory, and that's not really something you can say for the majority of global stock markets. So the semiconductor sector continues to exhibit relative strength. And the kinds of companies that follow a subscription model are also continuing to exhibit relative strength. So, for example, Microsoft, having adopted the subscription model in 2016, continues to power ahead. And Cisco has increasingly adopted the same kind of model, so it has bounced rather impressively. Adobe was the first of those companies to adopt a subscription model, and it's almost right back at its peak. These are the kinds of companies that perhaps when we think about an inflationary outcome, and I think that that is increasingly relevant, but what are the kinds of assets that do best in an inflationary environment? Well, one is gold. Gold tends to be the go-to asset in terms of inflation protection. It was down $17 in here today. It's coming back from the upper side of its range in a reasonably dynamic manner, and it did something similar at the end of March and was able to regroup relatively quickly. And it will have to do so again in order to confirm that we're still in a demand-dominated environment. But I think that the volatility that we're having inside the range belies the bullish medium-term outlook, because this looks to me to be a very clear saucering pattern over the last 5 years. Everything changed at the beginning of 2016 when we had the massive reaction against the prevailing downtrend, and now we've had the period of right-hand extension. Commodities are best bought following pullbacks because they are prone to to failed upside breaks. In fact, it is their propensity to have failed upside breaks that contributes to the very powerful breakouts they eventually do put in when they can complete these lengthy ranges. It is not at all unusual for gold to range for 18 months. We saw ample evidence of that back in the bull market from the early 2000s, and this looks like another one of those ranges. I remember very clearly having this almost the exact same seeing the exact same set of conditions on a number of occasions all the way back in the early 2000s. where gold had had these lengthy ranges and very volatile trading ranges in the latter halves of these long medium-term corrections, and then breaking out in a very emphatic manner. And that is what I'm expecting from gold at this stage. What I also I'm reasonably I think enthused about gold, also from the perspective that I tend to still get a number of gold newsletters, and the subscribers send through reports. And what I find being the by far the most prevailing sentiment is caution. That when you look at the gold miners, they have been confined to what is a very inert range relative to the kind of action that they can put in historically over the course of the last 15 months, and it's not even yet in the middle of that range. I saw one comment today was that if it can't break out, then that'll be all she wrote. But that's within the context of a very inert range. If what it tells you is that people are not long. But what we are seeing is that the ETF holdings of gold are trending higher. People are accumulating gold. So certainly there is the question about what's happening on the geopolitical front, and that's a relatively short-term consideration. The much bigger question is about inflation, and inflationary pressures are mounting, that we are finally getting to a place where the global economy is doing somewhat better, and central banks are coming to the conclusion that they have to remove some of the excess liquidity that they have out there, lest we get a big inflationary problem. But there is, of course, the fact that everybody knows that the purchasing power of fiat currencies has been declining, that there is a rising cost of living, that asset price inflation has taken off, and these are all what people associate with inflationary figures. It's just simply that central banks don't tend to measure them that way. One of the other reasons, of course, that these subscription business model type companies are doing better is because they tend to have pricing power. That it's a lot easier to raise your subscription by 5 cents, 10 cents, 50 cents when you're Netflix. That, for example, if you have if, for example, Netflix raises their $9.99 monthly tariff to $10.05, it's probably not going to have a great effect on people, but it does, I think, give it an ability to raise prices, and that's something that Microsoft has and Cisco has, and these types of things add up. It's more difficult if you're selling a big ticket item to raise prices. So it is the subscription type businesses are probably going to be among those that offer some of the best protection against an inflationary outcome. And I think that that is certainly one of the points to bear in mind. When we look at the 10-year TIPS, and that is, I think, perhaps the best way of addressing how the bond market is viewing inflation. Well, it was up 3 basis points in here today, and this has been a developing range for almost 5 full years. This looks like a consolidation in the region of the upper side of this range, and it's very unlikely that we're going to see the yield pushing back below zero anytime soon, but rather more likely that it's going to break on the upside. Well, if we see TIPS breaking on the upside, that is going to result in a, I think, a clear return to an inflationary bias. And if we get that, then that is likely to be one of the factors that really contributes to gold doing well. But then we also have oil prices. And the oil price was relatively unchanged in here today, but more importantly than that, it is holding the break above $70. And this now looks like a recovery trajectory. So Having consolidated above the range and finding support in the region of $60 in the region of the trend mean, then this continues to look like a recovery scenario. Now, we have to be alert to the possibility that oil prices are going to surge higher from here. Surging oil prices are a predictor for future recessions because energy is a significant headwind to growth. It's a tax on economic expansion, and most particularly for consumers. So, what's happening in oil is, I think, rather interesting from both an investment perspective but also from a bigger macro perspective. Then, when we look at, for example, some of the energy investments, for example, the MLP sector, which is primarily the pipelines, have been very depressed, but they are starting to see signs of a return to investor interest, not least because oil prices are starting to tick up once more. Then, when we look at, for example, the energy ETF, then we're also seeing some evidence that demand is starting to return to dominance as well. This is a clear upward dynamic from close to the lower side of the range for the ETF. Royal Dutch Shell, which is beginning to see the dividends of concentrating more on natural gas, has bounced impressively from the 2200p level. And as long as it is holding that level, I think we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Even companies like BP, which have been, excuse me, ranging in a very volatile manner for years, are now pushing back up towards the upper side of that range. So, what it suggests, at least, is that when people are looking around, they are starting to think about bargains and starting to think about an inflationary bias. And it is the commodity complex starts to start hitting green lights in those terms. The continuous commodity index has been largely range bound since the middle of 2016, but it is firming from the region of the trend mean. And as long as it's doing that, then I think we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Well, if we're thinking about commodity price inflation, then we should also start thinking about some of the consumers. Obviously, Japan is a major consumer of commodities, and so is India. But the Indian market has bounced impressively from this 10,000 level. It continues to do so. And what this helps to confirm is that we have already had a pullback, and now we've seen at least a low of near-term significance. If it pulls back and finds support above that low that we've seen in the last 3 or 4 weeks, then we'll have a higher reaction low, and the argument that we've seen a medium-term low will be bolstered. But so far, it is looking reasonably sanguine. Then, when we look at the resources sector, it is also bouncing from the region of the trend mean, and obviously, the commodity complex is benefiting from the sanctions that have been put on Russia, and aluminium prices have bounced very emphatically from the 2000 level. And it is interesting too that 2000 had been an area of resistance pretty much from 2013 onwards, and now it's an area of support. So past resistance becoming future support is generally, I think, supportive of the medium-term bullish view. When we look at that on a somewhat longer term, then aluminium prices peaked above 3000 back in 2008. So they have plenty of runway in which to rally before the price becomes, I think, something of an obstacle to consumption. And copper prices are also firming from the region of the trend mean. So it really does need to hold, though, that $3 level. As long as it is doing that, then we can probably give the benefit of the doubt to the upside, but it will need to hold the $3 level. So I think when we look around the world, we are seeing that geopolitical tensions have risen, but there isn't a great deal of appetite for outright conflagrations just yet. There is the question, of course, what are we going to do about countries that are employing nerve agents, and chemical weapons. That represents a higher geopolitical premium just on its own. It's part of the reason why oil prices are rallying, quite apart from the fact that supply disruptions are also helping to support the price. And against all of that background, we have the rise of populism, which is a direct response to it's a revolt against the status quo. And that is likely to have an inflationary outcome. So I think the continued base formation development that we're seeing in gold, which looks increasingly likely to be resolved on the upside, is a reflection of that as well. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.